Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere Plugin Request, Session Affinity, Load Balancing, and Failover. Today's presenter is Bob Witcher. Bob has been working in WebSphere L2 support since November of 2008. In this capacity, he works directly with IBM customers in support of web server and WebSphere plugin request handling, as well as problems related to web server and plugin administration. Prior to working in WebSphere L2 support, Bob worked in WebSphere development and IBM HTTP server development. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Bob.
Thank you, Joseph. Can we start off with slide 2? This is the agenda for this presentation. We will start with a short plugin introduction, then we will discuss some key plugin properties, plugin SSL considerations, plugin request processing, plugin session affinity, plugin load balancing, plugin failover, and finally, plugin ESI cache. There are some slides in an appendix at the end of this presentation, which offer details on plugin administration for review after this presentation. Please go to slide 3. As a plugin introduction, this is a diagram of a WebSphere servlet request made through the web server. This request is submitted to the web server and routed by the WebSphere plugin to a target application server. One HTTP request is from the client to the web server, and the other HTTP request is from the plugin to the WebSphere application server. Note, there are two distinct HTTP requests for each HTTP servlet request issued to WebSphere through the web server. Go to slide 4. The main components of the WebSphere plugin are the plugin CFG.xml and the plugin load module. The plugin CFG.xml is generated and propagated through the WebSphere administration console. The WebSphere plugin load module runs in the web server process. The main functions of the WebSphere plugin is to map, route, and balance requests to the WebSphere application server. Slide 5, please. As mentioned earlier, the plugin configuration file contains plugin properties that determine the routing of requests through the WebSphere plugin to the application server. The key properties for handling plugin requests are the route, virtual host contained in the virtual host group object, the URI, which is contained in the URI group object, and the transport property contained in the server object. Go to slide 6. A route in the plugin CFG.xml identifies a cluster or an application server target for the plugin to send a request. The route consists of a server cluster, a virtual host group, and a URI group. There are normally multiple routes in a plugin CFG.xml. The plugin will check each route in the plugin CFG.xml to find an appropriate application server for a request. Slide 7. The virtual host group contains multiple virtual hosts which define the host name and port pairs for the web server and the application server. The virtual host group is generated from the application server and the application's virtual host definitions. Here's an example of two virtual hosts in the plugin CFG.xml. The virtual host consists of the host name and port, but wildcards are commonly used for the host name. Slide 8. The virtual host property is generated from the virtual host alias in the WebSphere DMG repository, Deployment Manager. The task in the WebSphere administration console for changing virtual hosts for the web server and the application server is located in the Environment, Virtual Host, Host Aliases panel. If you change the host alias associated with an application server, there are two things that you must do. One is, you must generate and propagate the plugin CFG.xml to the associated web servers so that the change is reflected to the plugin running in the web server process. The second, you must restart the application server for which the virtual host change was made. Failure to restart the application server will result in virtual host not found or undefined virtual host error messages. Slide 9. The URI group contains a list of URIs for applications that are mapped to a specific application server. And the last property, the server property in the plugin CFG.xml contains HTTP and HTTPS transports, which define the application server host and port. The HTTP and HTTPS host name and port are used by the plugin to issue requests to the application server. Slide 10. This is an example of two transports defined in a plugin CFG.xml. One transport is an HTTP transport, and the other is an HTTPS transport. By default, both HTTP and HTTPS transports are generated to the plugin CFG.xml. Slide 11. The HTTPS transport will have two additional properties, key ring and stash file. These properties are used to locate the plugin key file at plugin initialization. The HTTPS transport is needed if SSL is set up between the plugin and the application server. Slide 12. Considerations when setting up SSL between the plugin and the application server. If the plugin is running on the same machine as the application server, then setting up SSL between the plugin and the application server should not really be necessary. Typically, setup of SSL between the plugin and the app server is recommended when the web server is in the DMZ and the application server is behind a firewall. The setup of SSL between the plugin and the application server requires that the application server personal certificates be added to the plugin key file as a signer certificate for a successful SSL handshake. This process involves extraction of the application server personal certificate from the application server key P12 file and adding this personal certificate to the plugin key.kdb signer certificates. Please refer to the tech note on the next slide for details on setting up SSL between the plugin and the application server. For now, we can go to slide 14. We have additional SSL considerations. If you do not have SSL set up between the plugin and the application server, you may want to disable the HTTPS transport for the application server. If you want to need to disable this, you can go to the WebSphere Administration Console, go to Servers, Application Server, Server Name, Web Container Settings, Web Container Transport Chains. There you will find the WC inbound default secure port. If you uncheck the checkbox label enabled and then save, regenerate, propagate the plugin CFG.xml, the HTTPS transport for the application server will be removed from the plugin CFG.xml. Slide 15. So now we will discuss plugin request processing. It's important to know that all requests received by the web server are first processed by the plugin module before any web server handling. The plugin is the first module to handle requests sent to the web server. This is important to consider if you're modifying the request URI by using IHS directives in the HTTP.com. Modification of the web server request using the IBM HTTP server directive, like alias, will not be handled before plugin module processing. You must use the IBM HTTP server rewrite rule with the PT or R flags for the web server to modify the request URL before plugin processing. Slide 16. The rewrite rule with a PT flag will pass through a URL directly to the plugin after the handling of a rewrite rule. The PT flag does an internal rewrite and then passes the rewritten URI to the plugin. The client knows nothing about the internal rewrite when using the PT flag, and thus the URI in the browser does not change. For example, if a client requests a URI MyStuff and you rewrite this to mystuff/login.jsp using the rewrite rule and the PT flag, the request is then passed to the plugin and sent to the WebSphere, and WebSphere returns the login page to the client. But the client only sees the original requested URI as /mystuff. Since the rewrite to mystuff login.jsp took place internally. Slide 17. The rewrite rule with the R flag does a full redirect back to the client with the URL contained in the request location header. The client then issues the request for the new URL. In our prior example, with a request for URI MyStuff, if we're using the read-write rule with the R flag, the client or browser would get a 302 response with a location header containing the new URL /mystuff/login.jsp. And thus, the client would actually make a new request using the location header to URI/mystuff/login.jsp. And this URI would be seen in the browser. Redirects may also be used instead of the rewrite rule with the R flag. Slide 18. This is a link that offers some more details on plugin association with rewrite rules. Slide 19. Now we move on to some plugin processing. This is a simple overview of the plugin request process flow. We've already looked at route properties of the plugin CFG.xml. We're going to look at the highlighted members in green, number 3, the ESI cache, 4, session affinity, 5, round-robin load balancing, 7, plugin failover, but we will not be looking at them in this order. Slide 20. First, session affinity. Session affinity allows returning requests to be routed to the same server that handled the initial request, if that same server is available. Session affinity is handled by the WebSphere plugin through a special cookie configured and set by the application server. The default name for the application server session cookie is JSessionID. The JSessionID cookie is set through the WebSphere administration console through the Session Management Cookies panel. Go to slide 21. The JSession cookie contains 3 IDs, a cache ID, a session ID, and the clone ID. Only the clone ID is used by the WebSphere plugin for session affinity routing. Slide 22. For session affinity to work, a few things must be set up. Must have a clustered environment created. The JSession cookie must be enabled by the application server. The clone ID is generated and propagated to the plugin CFG.xml after the JSession cookie setup and enablement in the application server. The plugin configuration file should be regenerated whenever application server changes are made that affect clone ID. Clone ID in the plugin configuration file must match the clone ID associated in the JSession ID cookie. 523. This is an excerpt of a plugin CFG.xml with a clone ID. The clone ID is unique for each application server and is associated with only one application server. Slide 24. The next few slides will contain excerpts of a plugin log to illustrate how the plugin handles session affinity. You will first see clone ID set via set cookie. Then you will see how the plugin processes clone ID on subsequent requests. This slide shows the JSession cookie being set on a response from the application server. As indicated earlier, it's the application server that sets the clone ID in the JSession ID cookie. This log entry is written when the plugin log level is set to detail in the plugin CFG.xml. The JSession ID contains the clone ID in red, which you can see is separated from the session ID by a colon. Once the clone ID is set, the affinity for an application server is established. Subsequent requests should be routed to that same application server. Slide 25. Now, on subsequent requests through the plugin, the clone ID is parsed from the JSession cookie header and compared to clone IDs in the plugin CFG.xml. As long as the JSession ID cookie header is sent on each request from the client, the plugin will attempt to match the request to the affinity application server. These log entries show the clone ID in red from a request is being compared to the plugin CFG clone IDs in blue. Slide 26. This slide shows a match for a request. The clone ID and the associated application server is then selected. Slide 27. Next, you can see in this log entry that the JSession ID cookie header containing the clone ID as the request is being passed on to the application server. The plugin detail log level shows the JSession cookie header with the cache ID, the session ID, and the clone ID. The application server uses the session ID and cache ID as part of session management. The request has now been sent on to the Affinity application server. Slide 28. In this slide, you can see the stats log entry, enabled by setting log level equal stats in the plugin cfg.xml. This log entry gives us the statistics for the plugin request for each application server on a per-process basis. So to get a complete picture of all stats for a given application server, you'd have to locate multiple stat entries for the same application server for every plugin process in the plugin log. The stat entry contains the application server name in blue, the affinity requests in red, total requests in green, and the process ID in purple. There are many factors that affect session affinity, so when debugging concerns about session affinity, we need to set log level to trace to get more details about prospective events that occurred relative to session affinity. Slide 29. Session affinity can interfere with an even distribution of requests. In fact, an even distribution of requests should not always be expected with session affinity. For example, when an application server is not available, all new requests will be assigned session affinity to the next available application server. And session affinity will be broken when an application server on which session affinity has been set is no longer available. Slide 30. When the plugin can no longer connect or receive responses from a specific application server, the plugin will fail over and possibly mark the application server down. Failover is the method in which the plugin will route requests to the next available application server. There are several conditions under which the plugin will mark a particular cluster member down and failover client requests to another cluster. They're listed here. The plugin is unable to establish a connection to a cluster member's application server transport. The plugin detects via timeout that there has not been a response from the application server from a previously submitted request. The plugin detects a newly connected socket that was prematurely closed by a cluster member during an active read or write. Next, we'll discuss the details of plugin failover and markdown and the properties that affect the handling of plugin failover and markdown. Slide 31. These plugin properties affect plugin failover and application server markdown. They're located in the plugin cfg.xml. They're server I/O timeout, connection timeout, and retry interval. Application server markdown means the plugin will no longer attempt to route requests to a particular application server. The application server is marked down, and the application server is no longer included in the plugin routing process. Slide 32. This slide contains details on the server I/O timeout property. The server I/O timeout value is a number in seconds which specifies how long the plugin will wait on an application server request before timeout of that request. Recommended value is 120 seconds. But this value should be tuned to specific configurations. The default value prior to WebSphere 7.0 was 0, but has been changed in WebSphere 7.0 to 60 seconds. 0 is not typically a good value, as this will leave the timeout up to the OS TCP layer, and this can be a very long time. Setting the server I/O timeout to a positive number will cause the plugin to not mark down the application server when the timeout fires. Setting the server I/O timeout to a negative number will cause the plugin to mark down the application server when the timeout fires. Slide 33. Connection timeout value is a number in seconds which specifies how long the plugin should wait for a response when trying to open a socket to the application server. Recommended value is very small, as this operation should be very quick unless there's a network problem. The default prior to version 7.0 was 0 and has been changed in version 7.0 to 5. The value of 0 will leave the timeout up to the OS TCP layer. Slide 34. The retry value is a number in seconds which specifies how long the plugin should wait before attempting to route requests to an application server that was previously marked down. Recommended value is 60 seconds. This value should be tuned. An application server not being responsive to the plugin is not always a terminal problem. Most markdowns are recoverable scenarios, so a short interval may be advantageous. When the interval expires, the plugin will attempt to route a request to the application server, and if the application server is again not available, the application server will be marked down again and the retry interval is reset. This process will continue indefinitely. Slide 35. Here's some tech notes that discuss plugin failover and application server markdown. Slide 36. Now that we know session affinity, failover, and application server markdown, let's look in more detail at what actually happens to a session affinity request through the application server markdown and failover. When the plugin fails over a request to the next available application server, session affinity is replaced on failover with a new affinity server. If the new application server needs certain session data that is not part of the request data, the request will fail. And if authentication data is not known, the request will require the client to re-log in. So if you do not have a session persistent mechanism, a request that fails over will fail and may require the client to re-log in. We will discuss session persistence shortly, but for now we will continue with the details of failover with session affinity. Slide 38. In failover with session affinity, the clone ID will be replaced with a new clone ID associated with the new application server. In this log entry, we see the new clone ID in a set cookie log entry, which is logged as part of a response from the new affinity application server. There is no indication that a prior clone ID was set. The session affinity is completely replaced with the new clone ID. Setcookie establishes or reestablishes session affinity in the plugin log. In this log entry, there is no indication that session affinity has been reassigned. Additional traces are necessary to determine if session affinity has been reassigned due to failover. The session ID is not changed, only the clone ID. This is how failover is handled with session affinity when there's no session persistent mechanism. Slide 38. So what does session persistence do for session affinity? Session persistence is the means by which the plugin and the application server will maintain session integrity, not affinity, after the plugin has failed over to the next available application server. As requests fail over to the next application server and new session affinity is established, if there is persistent data shared between the application servers in the cluster, the failover request will not fail or require a re-login. Slide 39. When there is a session persistence mechanism, the application server and the plugin handle the failover with session affinity a little differently. The failover request is routed to the next available application server, but the session affinity clone ID is not replaced. Instead, a new clone ID is assigned and added. This log entry shows the J session ID with two clone IDs. The old clone ID in red is always first in the string. The new clone ID is in blue. When or if the old affinity application server is not marked down and becomes available, the session affinity will be restored back to the initial affinity server. The plugin will always attempt to match the first clone ID. The goal with session affinity and session persistence is to allow the session affinity to revert back to the initial affinity server. This is why there are multiple clone IDs and the original clone ID is not replaced. Slide 40. There are two session persistent mechanisms in WebSphere. Memory-to-memory, in which session data is shared in memory among application servers. See the link there. And database sharing, in which session data is shared through a database. Both methods share session data among servers in a cluster so that during failover, the request is handled as if session affinity was not broken. Slide 41. The last major topic we have to discuss is plug-in load balancing. There are two methods, random, which is just that, and there's not much to discuss, round robin, which attempts to evenly distribute requests across cluster members. Round robin works best in a single process environment because the load balance weights used by the round robin are not global weights, but they're managed separately in each web server process that the plugin runs. Slide 42. Plugin load balancing is indirectly affected by application server availability, application server resources, and session affinity. The main configurable factor that affects load balance for the plugin in a round robin method is the configured load balance weights. Slide 43. The load balance weight is initially configured by the administrator through the WebSphere administration console. The load balance weight is a number from 1 to 20. See the administration console tasks, servers, clusters, cluster members for changes to the load balance weight. Slide 44. Plugin load balancing attempts to distribute requests based on the load balance weights while at the same time managing session affinity. We will discuss the plugin load balancing process, but first we need to become familiar with some additional terms used in plugin load balancing process. Here they are GCD, which is the greatest common divisor, internal router table weights, sticky and non-sticky requests, and finally, the plugin algorithm that the plugin uses to maintain and adjust load balance weights. We will define all four, but more importantly, we will have an example at the end. Slide 45. The greatest common divisor, this is the largest number that is evenly divisible into the configured load balance weights. For example, if our load balance weights are 8, 6, and 18, the GCD would be 2. Next, the internal router table weights are integers that are derived from the configured load balance weights by dividing by the GCD. For example, if the configured load balance weights are 8, 6, and 18, and the GCD is 2, then the internal router table weights are 4, 3, and 9. Slide 46. Next, we need to understand the concept of sticky and non-sticky, which relates to session affinity. A sticky request is a request with session affinity established, while a non-sticky request is a request in which session affinity is not established. Typically, a new request is considered a non-sticky request. The last item we will define is the actual plugin algorithm, which will make more sense in context. Slide 47. We will show an actual example later, but here is the general overview of the plugin round robin and rules. The initial internal router table weights are set using the configured load balance weights and the GCD. As requests are routed to an application server, the internal router table weight is decremented by 1 for each application server. Non-sticky requests or new requests are not routed to any application server with an internal router weight less than or equal to 0. so no new requests are routed to an application server when the internal router weight is less than or equal to zero. Sticky or session affinity requests are continued to be routed to an application server whose internal router table weight is zero or less. We continue to decrement for each request, so potentially the internal router table weight can be negative. Slide 48. When the internal router table weight for all cluster members is less than or equal to zero, the plugin component will reset the internal router table weights. Note, the internal router table weights may not be set to their initial values. Slide 49. The plugin algorithm is used to adjust and reset the internal router table weights. The goal is to account for any uneven distribution based on session affinity, sticky requests. If you remember, session affinity or sticky requests are requests that are routed even after the internal router table weights for an application server are less than zero. The algorithm formula is defined to find a minimum number M such that W plus M times S is greater than zero for all application servers. In the formula, W is the current internal router table weight, S is the starting internal router table weight. This is best illustrated in a simple example. Slide 50. In this example, we have three application servers. We start with a configured load balance weight for server 1, set to 8, server 2, set to 6, and server 3, set to 18. We calculate the GCD as 2. We determine the initial table weights for server 1 to be 4, server 2 to be 3, server 3 to be 9. Remember, the internal router table weight is calculated by the load balance weight divided by the GCD, and the point of this weight is to indicate the desired distribution of requests. In our example, server 3 is targeted for the most requests. As requests are routed, sticky and non-sticky, across all three application servers, we reach the point where all three servers, server weights, are less than or equal to zero. So the plugin is going to reset or adjust the internal router table weights. At this point, the current internal router table weights, for our example, for server 1 is equal to minus 20, server 2 is equal to minus 40, server 3 is equal to 0. Note that server 1 and server 2 contain negative numbers because we continue to route sticky or affinity requests to them after the internal router table weight for each server was decremented to 0. So far, we've not really kept to the desired distribution. Since server 3 was our choice for the highest distribution, but you can see we have not distributed the most number of requests to server 3. Slide 51. Using the algorithm, we find a number 14 for which M plus W times S is greater than 0 for all application servers. So we apply the value of the number M to each server equation, and we establish a new internal router table weight for each server. In our example, server 1 had a current internal router table weight of minus 20, and the initial starting internal router table weight of 4. When you apply the value 14 to the algorithm, you get a new internal table weight for server 1 of 36. Following through for server 2, server 2 has an initial router table weight of 3, the current internal router weight of minus 40, and a new weight of 2. Server 3 had an initial router table weight of 9, current internal router weight of 0, and it has a new weight of 126. Slide 52. So in summary, the intent, based on the configured load balance weights, was to favor respectively server 3 with an initial internal router weight of 9, server 1 with a router weight of 4, and server 2 with a weight of 2. Actual distributions, because of session affinity, favored server 2 handling 43 requests, server 1 handling 24 requests, and server 3 was last and handled 9 requests. So to compensate, the new established weights using the plugin algorithm are server 3 with an internal router weight of 126, server 1 with an internal router weight of 36, server 2 with an internal router weight of 2. Over time, the plug-in load balance algorithm will attempt to make an even distribution of requests across all servers. Go to slide 53. 53 and slide 54 are additional links relative to plug-in load balancing and workload management. Can we go to slide 55? As a follow-on to load balancing, this slide shows a method for gracefully taking an application server in a cluster offline. Based on the plug-in load balance design, no new requests will be routed to an application server with an internal router table weight of 0. If the configured load balance weight is set to 0, the internal router table weight will be set to 0, and no new requests will be routed to that application server. However, any existing requests, sticky or affinity requests, will continue to be routed to that application server until the session is timed out or closed. So over time, this is a way to gracefully take a cluster member offline. Slide 56. The last topic in this presentation is the plug-in ESI cache. The plug-in ESI cache caches static content for servlet application, like images and cascading style sheets. The way it works is, the first time the plugin handles a request for these static files, the request is sent to the application server. When the response is returned from the application server, the plugin will store the static content into the plugin ESI cache, if there is sufficient memory. Then on subsequent requests for the same static content, the plugin will not send the request to the application server, but will serve the static content from the plugin ESI cache. This only applies to static files like GIFs, style sheets, and JavaScripts. Dynamic content are not cached in the ESI cache. Slide 57. The ESI cache is enabled by default with a maximum size of 1 meg. These values are found in the plugin cfg.xml. Slide 58. Each web server process has a separate plugin instance with a separate ESI cache. This can produce variable hits and misses, as one plugin process may have cached the static content and the other may not. Hit or miss depends on the plugin process on which the request is being handled. Each plugin process will contain its own ESI cache. So this should be a factor. This should be factored into memory usage for the web server. The ESI cache is cleared in three ways. One, a web server restart. Two, based on the default timeout value of 300 seconds. Or three, through the cache monitor WebSphere application if installed and configured. The cache monitor application is located in the WebSphere installable apps directory. I've added the next few panels because there's some concerns and lack of documentation to enable and use the cache monitor application. Slide 59. To monitor the ESI plugin cache, you need to perform some additional configuration. One, you must install the Cache Monitor and Dynacache ESI WebSphere applications using normal install and deployment process. You must set the ESI invalidation monitor to true in the plugin CFG.xml through the WebSphere administration console plugin properties, web server plugin properties. The ESI invalidation monitor allows the cache monitor to clear cache entries. So if that is not set to true, the cache monitor will not have the ability to clear the entries. Then you must generate and propagate the plugin cfg.xml. Slide 60. Once the cache monitor is installed and deployed and mapped to an application server, you can monitor cache statistics and cache content through the cache monitor application using the URL shown in red. Note, the panel does not update when you refresh the browser page. You must click the buttons on the associated panels to refresh statistics or refresh content. Slide 61. To clear cache content and reset statistics using Cache Monitor, click Edge Statistics from the panel, and then click the Clear Cache button and or click the Reset Statistics button. Slide 62. To customize the timeout interval for clearing the ESI cache, use the custom properties listed there. To add the custom properties, go to the JVM. To add the JVM custom property, go to the WebSphere Administration Console task, go to application server name, process, definition, Java Virtual Machine, and custom properties, and set it there. The last foil, slide 63, shows a tech note with additional links and details on setting up and configuring the ESI cache. At this point, I will turn the presentation back to Joseph.
Thank you, Bob, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Laurie, we would like to open the line for questions.
And Dan, Shad, your line is open.
Hi, Bob. I'd like to ask a question. I think around slides 32, 33, and 34, you're mentioning some settings that may address a scenario that I have. The scenario is I have a two-node cluster running WebSphere Portal, and I have a total of six cluster members, and I am using a web container thread upper limit of 15. And if one of my clones' web container threads max out, I do not want to send traffic to that clone, even though the plugin will not mark it down because the clone is still running. If those slides address this, and I apologize, but could you maybe explain a resolution or a way to route traffic away from a clone that's not ready to handle a request because it might be maxed out in web container threads?
Oh, okay. Is that Dave?
Dan.
Dan. It sounds like you would like to anticipate a markdown, if I understand it correctly. If your web container threads eventually max out, I believe the plugin will actually fail attempting to either connect or get a response back. Are you looking to get to tune something such that the server is not marked down, in other words, in a proactive way?
Well, in my plugin log, I'm not seeing my clones getting marked down in my scenario that I explained to you. I guess I'm trying to figure out a way how I can prevent the plugin from still routing traffic to a particular clone that is maxed out on web container threads.
What? Why don't we do? Can you? You can send me an email with some of these details, and we can correspond about it. That may be the best way to do it.
And I'm fine with that.
Yeah, because I think I'm going to have to pull in some application server resources to really look into it.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
Yep.
The next question is from Matt Semischuk.
Yes, I was wondering, does the length of the plugin impact performance? For example, we could generate a plugin on the whole cell or just the node, and right now we have pretty much one web server instance per node, and we have the whole cell's plugin basically mapped to each web server instance, even though there's basically extra information included from the other nodes that it's not needed. So I was wondering if we can, by consolidating that to just the nodes plugin information and also removing the HTTPS transports, like you mentioned in the presentation, would that help performance at all?
Well, I mean, from my experience in reviewing logs, I would say yes, but I can't quantify it. I have seen trace logs where the plugin, the entries, the URIs and the virtual host and all the routes, and actually a case where you're really not using SSL, a lot of that process, as long as those properties exist in the plugin CFG.xml, there will be additional processing. I don't know if it's a factor, but it is pretty simple to disable the HTTPS, and it's pretty simple to bring it back. So it's worth trying, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Okay, thank you.
And Walter Kaczynski, your line is open.
Hello. I'd like to use the ESI for static content, but I wanted to know, is it possible to configure that so that we can set headers on it so that content will also be cached in the client browser?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
I guess I want to use the ESI cache so we can, you know, one, cache the static content instead of going to the app server every time. And then it's sort of as a level two, in addition to that, for each client request, instead of going back to the, you know, the web server to retrieve that static content, can you set a cache header so that it's cached locally on each client's computer?
Okay, so, okay, there's a difference between the ESI cache, which is caching static content for the application server.
Yes.
But you could also configure, which, you know, requires some coordination and setup. You can take that same static content and based on the URI, attempt to force that static content to be served out of the web server, in which case you would then, you know, have your browser, you know, determine, you know, the web server would then respond with a not modified or not.
Okay, so we would essentially it'd have to have the web server serve directly from disk where the app is deployed and not use the ESI cache?
I'm saying that as an alternative.
Okay, right. But you can't do both. I'm trying to figure out if you can do both. I can send you an email if you like, I guess.
Yeah, before I say yes or no, let me check on it. And can you send me an email so I can get you an answer?
Yep, no problem. Thank you.
And the next question is from Igor Belitsky.
Hello. I have a question regarding slide 22 and 23 about clone ID. I'm slightly confused because in our environment, within the application server, we don't enable cookies. Instead, we enable URL rewriting. But the clone ID is still generated properly, and web server is able to support session affinity using the clone ID.
Yes. Now, are you using URL rewrite for session affinity?
Yes.
Right. And I've seen that. Are you saying that you're not able to do it, or?
No, I able to do this. What I'm trying to understand is, according to the slide 22, cookie is enabled. You need cookie to be enabled to be able to use clone ID. But in our case, we are using clone ID without enabling the cookies.
Okay.
So I'm trying to understand the mechanism.
Can you send me an email on that as well?
Okay.
For me to look into it. I know basically you're asking about how clone ID, JSession ID, and URL session affinity work together.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. Thank you.
At this time, there are no further questions.
Thank you, Laurie. At this time, we will conclude the presentation.